From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we visit UN headquarters in New York for a press conference with Connie Wingenara, the UNDP Asia-Pacific Director, and Abdallah Al-Daldari, UNDP Resident Representative in Afghanistan, on poverty projections for Afghanistan in the wake of the U.S.'s exit from that country.
Really glad to be able to interact with you, and maybe let me jump right in with saying that Afghanistan pretty much faces universal poverty by middle of next year. That's where we're heading. It's 97-98%, no matter how you work these projections. And we've used a lot of our data that we had, because we had done quite a few socioeconomic assessment studies for COVID to across the country before the current situation. Plus, we're using a lot of the data that the World Bank and others have also submitted. Now, the poverty rate currently is at about 72%. But what we don't talk about often is that quite some progress had been made on the development side. And I think I need to put some of that back on the table, because the question often is, so were there any gains? What happened in the last 20 years? Now, per capita income more than doubled in that period. Life expectancy at birth was extended by about 9 years. Years of schooling went from 6 to 10. And we got women into university. That's a huge, huge capability that's just not going to be taken away. Now, when we speak, we use this term compounding crisis. It's not compounding, it's compounded crisis, because it's happened, right? So what does that mean? So together with political instability, you've now got a freeze on foreign reserves. You've got a collapsed public finance system. You've got a crush on local banking because of all of this. And you've got COVID, which we don't even now talk about, right, when we're talking Afghanistan. The numbers, as our WHO colleagues have told us, are not as intense as they were some months ago, but it's still very much there with the variants brought on. And we've got a drought. So if you look at this, it's both a humanitarian and development disaster. I don't know how else to put it. Now, in the assessments that we did, we speak to four scenarios. It's along a escalation line, if you wish, of intensity and isolation. So it really depends now on the modeling was done based on how much the crisis and these other factors are going to rise in intensity, but also the reaction of the world to how much it will isolate Afghanistan or continue to engage with it. So if you look at the worst case scenario and then the better case scenario, if one can call it that, and I was just speaking also with my World Bank colleagues, and they've done a similar kind of scenario mapping, because we're working very closely together with them. So let's take a scenario where there is a complete interruption to world trade with Afghanistan. In just 2 months with such a break, then we will see a 4% decrease and a 4% decrease in capital spending. This is to us and a complete disruption in connectivity. That to us means we're heading right to that universal poverty scenario. If some of this is more measured, then you see scenarios that are more at a medium and a more manageable scale. Now, you can't address this with humanitarian relief alone. It's just not going to happen. We need short-term humanitarian relief, absolutely essential. But if it's going to stop people from fleeing, you've got to also save their livelihoods, right? They've got to have a means of income at a local level. And that's where I would like to hand over to my colleague, Abdullah, who we're working with as UNDP to look at a local development shoring up process for local communities so that basic essential services continue, livelihoods, particularly through small and micro enterprises, continue. And that's, you know, in Afghanistan, like in most places in the world, these are run and managed by women. And to look at whether we can continue to support the farmers with getting their winter crop up, with also drought and flood protection, while also working with seeds and fertilizer to them. So if I could call Stefan Abdullah to pick up the baton from here.
Great. Abdullah, thank you. And please welcome.
Thank you very much. To follow from Cammy's remarks, the poverty output elasticity in Afghanistan, meaning for each drop in GDP, we have a 1.9 percentage point drop in increase in poverty levels. With the expected drastic contraction in the economy by 13%, we can expect almost a universal poverty level of 97%. Now, what should we do? And what should we do now? Because there is no time to wait until the crisis exasperates. The crisis is already exasperated with universal poverty. There is no time to wait, and therefore saving livelihoods is as important as saving lives. In fact, saving livelihoods would save lives in a 97% poverty situation. Therefore, UNDP put together, as part of the UN response to the crisis in Afghanistan, we put together a package of local community resilience, supporting livelihoods, supporting jobs for young men and women, reaching households that have people with disability, and reaching households with people above 65 years of age, and making sure that we reach the 65,000 enterprises owned by women in Afghanistan, and making sure that there is 1 million young men and women who find jobs in these difficult times. All of this will reach about 9 million Afghans. This package is mainly focused at the local level. It is mainly focused at the community level. How can we support the communities? How can we make sure we are agile and flexible and working within the UN family here to reach every child from 0 to 4 years old, every person with disability, and every person above 65 years old? That would help us reach 97%, that will help us reach 9 million people. But most importantly, we preserve through this package the gains of 20 years of economic and social development in Afghanistan. Because the Afghan population, by the time the events of 15 August happened, the Afghan population was already on the brink of collapse economically and socially. COVID and economic deterioration have already made so many Afghans, the majority of Afghans, on the verge of falling into poverty. And now they are falling into poverty. And therefore, we would like to make sure that local communities in Afghanistan have access to finance, have access to support, have access to markets. We can make sure that through this package, the humanitarian assistance phase can be shortened and the resilience phase and the livelihood phase can start and kickstart early. There is no time to wait to end humanitarian to start resilience of communities. We have to start the resilience of Afghan communities today. And that is the essence of the program that UNDP is putting together as part of the overall UN work to save Afghanistan's development gains and make sure that the Afghan people not just survive, but also live in dignity, and they have the ability to choose their futures. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. First question will go to Edie Letter of the Associated Press. Edie?
Thank you both very much on behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association for doing this briefing. This package that you were just talking about involves a lot of businesses with women, interactions with the community. Have you had any chance yet to present this package or get an okay from the Taliban? And in any event, can you give us a picture of what universal poverty will mean for individual people in Afghanistan?
Connie, do you want to take first stab at it?
Thanks, Edie. And let me say that we've been working on this package actually for the last 6 months. It actually was our plan B, right, which is to go decentralized. So we've taken our entire portfolio, which worked at different levels of the country, and moved it into a complete local level, district-based system. So that right now has been really running on a few things that we were already doing at local levels and continue to function. So if I look at the COVID response, that continues unabated. The work we do with WHO and the Global Fund on the TB caseload, the malaria caseload, HIV caseload continues. So we are running on this, and we've not, let me say not yet, had to ask for national level permissions. We have been allowed at the local level as part of the UN humanitarian and development community to get on with our work. And let's hope that that continues, because otherwise the bottom is going to fall off. And it comes right to what you said of what does poverty look like to the individual. And if there is, you know, Afghanistan imports 75% of its electricity right now. And this is going to be squeezed. So to get solar energy going, which is also part of the package, to homes, to clinics, to schools, to make sure that the distribution systems for essential services, and we are looking prioritizing health, but you've got water, sanitation, education, food. So the whole UN system here, it's you work the whole village, right, to make sure that some of these just hold up. Because right now, what's holding it up are those micro businesses and the small farmers still keeping things going.
Thank you. Abdullahi, would you want to add something?
Maybe just to say that 70% and more of the Afghan economy is made up of informal activities. And 70% of that informal sector is owned by women. And therefore, we need to focus on women in Afghanistan to prevent poverty, to prevent even famine. Because in this juncture, the relationship between SDG 1, poverty, and SDG 2, hunger, is very strong. We are looking at multidimensional poverty. And that means people will not only be poor, but they will be multidimensionally poor and they will be hungry. So the intervention is as humanitarian as one can think of in these special and difficult circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle Nichols, Reuters.
Thank you so much for the briefing. Michelle Nichols from Reuters. Just out of those four scenarios, which one do you think is most likely? Are you able to project that? And you mentioned the frozen international assets. How big a role could that play in averting any of these projections? Thanks.
Uh, Thanks, Michelle. I think for us, you know, we would love to wake up every morning thinking it's going to be the best case scenario. I have never woken up any morning thinking it's going to be the worst case. So we're looking at hitting it somewhere in that middle scenario. Because remember, it's both a case of intensity of conflict and isolation, right? And we already see that there are countries reaching out, providing humanitarian relief. The borders are open, the land borders. We are starting to see not commercial flights, but humanitarian flights coming in. So supply lines are being kept open. So I would say it's in that middle two scenarios that we're looking at, without hopefully the dropping off the cliff. But we're standing right at that edge. If we can get COVID under control, which means the COVAX facility has to move in fast. And UNICEF's doing an amazing job with WHO to bring in the supplies. UNDP then comes in country to help then to administer the supply chain and help it to move. So we need the safe operating spaces. And again, right now, I have to say, it's there. And with Martin Griffiths' visit, and you heard from him, let's hope that this continues to open up more and more spaces. On the international assets, that, as you know, I think it's tonight that the G7 foreign ministers, the finance ministers meet. This is a discussion that's right at the center of their table. And it will be a significant signal as to whether they're going to engage, how much they will, and whether there are, if not through those means, other means in which to make sure there's cash injections needed to keep the economy alive.
Sorry, just a quick follow-up to that. Martin Griffiths did mention the other day the emergency cash transfer program in Yemen that he said he hoped could be replicated possibly in Afghanistan. Is that sort of what you're talking about possible other cash injections?
That's just one, and maybe Abdullah wants to come in here as well, because we've done this in a number of countries, including working very closely with the World Bank and other IFIs. Because the UN does have a operating space behind humanitarian emergencies, right? So we can go in and support and provide a bridging period until the authorizing environment for the IFIs can kick back in. So that is one means. But there's also direct means through NGOs that can happen. I remember we were here 20 years ago, right, working both through NGOs, through the UN, to keep things moving until the formal structures can come back again.
Thank you. Fethi?
Thank you very much for this briefing for both of you in New York and in Kabul.
Istanbul.
I'm sorry, Istanbul.
To be clear, it's Istanbul.
Istanbul, I'm sorry. But just, I mean, other than the track of the humanitarian needs in Afghanistan, which there is no doubt about it, that it is needed and it's urgent, let me get to the development side. The human development numbers you presented are quite admirable, taking the situation, ongoing situation for the past 20 years. However, when we are speaking about universal poverty, there is lots of data that's been discounted from the UNDP and all the UN agencies, with the exception of the UNODC, the drugs and crimes. Based on their study released, that almost 38%, if I'm not mistaken, of the GDP of Afghanistan derived from poppy and opium and heroin manufacturing. Since 70% of the enterprises are women-owned, small to micro-size, where does this narco economy fits. I understand the international community is eager to provide Afghanistan with all the aid and the finances needed to get through this period. But are we on the same time as international community providing Taliban with pocket money to spend, since they were taxing the pop industry and the drug industry before the U.S. was...
Fethi, would you respect a question mark? Thank you.
Okay. So what is the UNDP planning to deal, and the other UN agency, if you can answer on their behalf, dealing with the narco economy in Afghanistan? Thank you.
Thank you.
So let me say on the human development gains, right? I mean, these have been slow but steadily rising up. So you're very right. And those investments came because of the investments in things like health and education, right? And if you're doubling per capita income across the board, that's a huge gain. So you're right that there is a part of Afghanistan's economy that has been fueled by the opium industry, by illegal trade, by drug trafficking and arms trafficking. That's not the area that UNDP has been working with. That is with ODC, with the DPPA, and with a number of bilateral partners. But this package we're talking about is very much a local economy package. And the micro enterprises are basically running your food, your essential services, so we're talking about holding the bottom up here to grow and put back those assets that have allowed households to survive for 20 years. So yes, there is the dark side of the economy, but that is not what this package addresses. But Abdullah, you want to speak to any joint work with UNODC, et cetera?
Yes, Kami. First of all, we have the CBART project, which is a project to replace poppy production by alternative agricultural and rural value chain. And it's a successful project. We have exports. Before 15 August, CBARG products were sold in the Dubai food exhibition and so on. So that is creating livelihoods for farmers, and we are relying on that and on those mechanisms to expand our local community development support. I'd like also to add one point, Kani, on the question of the Afghan economy. We knew that the official GDP figures of $20 billion are much less than the actual size of economic activity in Afghanistan. And therefore, we understand in the current situation that classical top-down economic packages will not work. And therefore, hence our focus on the bottom-up community resilience, which will sustain the economy until the moment when such economic packages could be introduced. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Betul, Anadolu News Agency.
Thank you very much, Betul Yuruk, Anadolu Agency. Thanks for doing this. I have a couple of questions. When Martin Griffiths held a press conference with us, he also said that one Taliban official, a senior official, told him that they also need guidance before they guide their people. I'm just wondering if they reached out to the UN for any guidance, and you talked about the role of women and their contribution to the economy, but we also saw the announcement from the Taliban leadership about their interim government with no women included. Do you have any confirmation about the abolishment of the Ministry of Women Affairs?
I have heard exactly what you have heard on that, and that is one of the it is a deeply distressing fact if they've removed a ministry that was actually doing an amazing job and functioning very well to support all of the efforts of women in and girls in Afghanistan. On the overall engagement, this is where all of our senior leadership, and you will see more senior leaders from the UN also heading in to keep engaging with the Taliban administration to make sure that what enables and keeps us staying and delivering in the country, including for all those women and girls, because otherwise we leave them behind. Then we've got to make sure that the both not just their immediate need for survival, but just the dignity of being able to live in a way they have now been used to. This is why I say 20 years of investment is not going to be taken away by the current situation. So I hope we can stay in and continue to work to open up those spaces, which to me is a must. And as Fethi said, this is not humanitarian relief. This goes to fundamental development and keeping those jobs and opportunities for women and girls alive, I think, is going to be absolutely critical. So we will continue negotiating hard for those spaces and to keep that moving across all of the regions in Afghanistan. But yes, if you ask me, would I have loved to see more women, even in an interim cabinet? The answer is absolutely yes. There's no women there at all. Whereas we had in 20 years, if you look at it, 1/5 of parliamentarians were women. 1/4 of the civil service that we worked with were women. That's powerful, right? And so we will work to get back there.
Thank you. Dulcie Lembach, Pass Blue.
Thanks very much. You said, I'm just looking at my notes, 70% of the economy is based on an informal sector, and most of that is done by women. So I'm just curious, what are the men doing?
Maybe Fethi has the answer to that. Yeah. But Abdullah, you want to take that?
I can testify that the Afghan women are very entrepreneurial, very resilient. They are the backbone of the Afghan economy. And I'm saying this statement not lightly. They are the backbone of the Afghan economy. So in any talks with the Taliban, we will be able to say, it is not because we want to fight for women's rights. We do, and we will. But it's also in the interest of the nation to support these women. There is a new social contract emerging in Afghanistan. And as it emerges, we need to make sure that women and young people are empowered enough economically so that they can take their role in that new social contract. And hopefully with less fighting, young men will also go to productive sectors because women also had to play that role because most men were either involved in illicit informal economies or in the security sector on all sides of the conflict. Let's hope that we see some normalization of economic activity and the labor market in Afghanistan.
Okay, any questions online? If so, open your microphone. Excellent. We will, our thanks, release Kani and Abdullah. Thank you from Istanbul. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, Abdullah Al-Dardari is UNDP's resident representative in Afghanistan, currently sitting in Istanbul. And Kani Wignaraja is UNDP's Asia-Pacific director. So thank you both.
Thank you, Steph. And can I just say one thing in closing?
You may.
Just to say that, you know, we've created, I think, a world with these separations of what we call humanitarian and development. And a woman sitting in a local community in Afghanistan is not thinking now, is this humanitarian, is this development? They're thinking, this is life. How do I save my family? How do I keep my kids in school? How do I find that next meal for the family? And that's the way we've got to look at it. And I really hope that although there are these kind of structural separations, this is a country team in Afghanistan that's really doing everything we can to work together. And so whatever the spaces we open up, whatever the agreements we reach, our networks with local NGOs and others, we're sharing those so that we can get to all parts of the country and provide that support at that level where across today, I think it was our CEC in Afghanistan was saying that right now, from a security and access point of view, we pretty much are okay across almost all of the country. And so it's really Kabul that has to open up, but the majority of the rest of the country will have us out there.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.